Second Frida Braun.
I'm an addict. My name is Ron.
Hey, Ron.
They just asked me to do this meeting a couple minutes ago. And what I told them was that if I had known you were going to do that, I would have went to another meeting. And then I come over here, and she said, well, let me go first because I've never done this, and I'm scared, and this, that, and the other, and I should have went first. How you go behind something like that? Because she did an excellent job. You know, I was sitting there thinking about what I was going to share about, and the topic is, you know, come clean and stay clean. And the first thing I thought about was when I first got clean. There was a guy around here named Gary E. And they told me to do a 90 and 90, and I had set out on that 90 and 90, and I was going to a meeting every day. And he told me if I called him, he would come and get me. And so I called him, and he came and got me. Every time I called him, he would. And then one day, this girl asked me to come around her house for dinner, and I didn't call him. So after I finished the dinner and all, I still went to a meeting because it was a midnight meeting. And the next day when I saw Gary, he said, well, what happened to you yesterday? And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, you didn't call me. I said, well, yes, I did. He said, no, you didn't call me. And I said, I did call you. You must not have gotten the call. And he said, looked at his phone, and he looked at me, and he said, wrong. If you plan on staying around this program, you're going to have to start telling the truth. You're going to have to come clean if you want to stay clean. And that was my first experience with that expression. You know, I think when I got clean, I was telling my sponsor last night, I said, I was really stupid because when I first got clean, I didn't know that you didn't have to follow direction. They told me that when you come around here, you do what you told. And if you do, you'll be able to stay clean. And that's what I started doing. I didn't know that I could do something different. Nowadays, man, you tell somebody to do something, it's a fight. Yeah, do a 90-90. I ain't doing that. Why should I have to do a 90-90? Do you want to live, fool? I did what he told me to do all the way down the line. And when I first did my first step, the first two words in the first step says, we admit it. And that was the beginning of telling the truth for me. You know, the first person I had to tell the truth to was my sponsor. And as I told the truth to my sponsor, it made me understand my own truths. You know, when I was growing up, one of the biggest issues I had was my father used to fight my mom. And I was about 8 years old at the time. And I could hear her yelling in there. And, you know, I remember, like, you know, being in fantasy as a little kid, the cowboys and Indians, the man from Uncle. I'm telling my age now if anybody remember those things. But I remember always, like, wanting to be a man. I remember my father, and he was a carpenter. He had these real thick arms, and, you know, he was real powerful and stuff. And I wanted to be like him. I wanted to be a man before I became a man. And I remember when he would beat my mom, I would get so angry at him. And I remember one day running in there and telling them to stop. And he looked at me and he said, if you come any closer, I will knock you out. And I was scared. It scared the hell out of me. And I saw him smacking her in the face. And I was afraid to come any closer because I thought that if he hit me, it would hurt me. But at the same time, I didn't want him hurting my mom. And you know, that's that self-centered fear, that it was on the inside where my heart was racing and I wanted to save her, but I couldn't save her. And from that moment on, I was more or less ashamed of myself. I was ashamed that I couldn't help my mom when I really, really wanted to. And I got angry, and what I learned out of that was that that's how I grew up. I grew up real angry. And I grew up angry because I couldn't beat my dad. So the only way I could hurt him was to hate him. And so every time that he would say something to me, I would just look at him like, one of these days I'm going to hurt you. You know, that's what I really looked forward to doing, because I wanted to put a stop to what he was doing. And I didn't want to share that with anybody. And then also, like around 8 years old, I got sexually abused by my cousin. So that just added insult to injury, because not only did that make me feel less than a man, but now I got a man that's beat my mom that I can't beat. So it was a lot of hatred for me growing up. And as I got older, the hatred just grew worse. It just expanded, because then it was in school. You know, I was fighting in school. I was fighting in the neighborhood. It was a whole lot of inside pain that I couldn't get outside, that I couldn't come clean with. I couldn't tell nobody what had happened to me. I wouldn't tell my mom what happened to me. I remember after I got clean, I told my mom about the sexual abuse, right? And she started crying. And I looked at her like, you know, why is she crying? And she started crying. She told me she felt like she wasn't there for me. And that it had hurt her to hear years later that this had happened and that I had held that in all of those years. You know, when my mom finally split from my dad, she moved from the Glen Arden, Lanham area to Annapolis. And he came over there one day. And he came over there because he was going to tell her what she can and cannot do in her house. And I remember going upstairs in her bedroom. And I had several guns by that time. And opening the window. And as he was walking down the sidewalk, I put a bullet about 4 inches from his foot. And I said, if you come any closer, that'll be your last step. And I scared the hell out of him. And I scared the hell out of myself too. But I had made up my mind at that point right there, I was not going to let him do anything else to her. It was about 4 years later that he even talked to me anymore. And I was going over, I had done a couple of steps in his program. I didn't have that hatred in my heart anymore. You know, God had softened me, You know, it was like, sometimes, you know, it's like I joke with people and stuff, and I got a buddy, and me and him say the same thing. It's like, N.A. made a punk out of me. You know, because in the streets I could do a whole bunch of stuff, but when I came in here, it was like, even when I wanted to hurt somebody, I couldn't. You know, I got to work these damn spiritual principles and shit. You know, like somebody tell a lie on me and I can't go punch him in the mouth. I got to go. Look, this dude, hey, listen. Let me finish this story first, then I'll tell you that. So anyway, I just finished my fourth step. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning. I ran to the phone, I called my sponsor, I said, I just finished my fourth step, I'm ready to go over it. He said, okay, how about 2 weeks from Saturday? I'm like, what? I went through all of this writing, all this stuff there. And you know, I thought about it for a little while, and if I wasn't prepared to wait the 2 weeks, then I really wasn't ready for the fourth step. And when I did that fourth step, I told him everything. I didn't hold anything back. It was one of the best experiences I ever had in my life. And every time I told him what was going on, it was the easy experience. Because, see, the fourth step is like the easiest step. And what everybody was telling me, it was a real hard step. And you're going to uncover all these feelings and all of this stuff. And, yeah, I felt all those feelings. But guess what? They had them 30 years ago. Ain't nothing they can do to me now. When I shared that fourth step with him, he revealed some stuff with me. He put things in perspective, and he made me understand how I had always made my own excuses for my life that weren't even real. I was angry about so much stuff that didn't even happen. Yeah. You know, I was mad at my mom because I thought she hated me. My mom never hated me. Do you know how long I went with that? So anyway, after I did my fourth step, I called my dad. And I told him, I said, listen, if you want to have a relationship, we can. That's up to you. And if you don't want one, I'm perfectly fine with that too. So he said, yeah. Me and my dad started to have this relationship. I would go up there and I would listen to him. And he would talk a whole bunch of shit. Yeah. I was always there for you. I paid your mother child support. I took care of you. And I would look at him and I said, no, you didn't. And he would look at me like, you know, no, you can't tell me that. I'm your father. You're not mine. I said, no, Dad, you didn't do none of that. I said, I remember when you was underneath the bridge shooting dice and a dude cut your jaw. I remember when you was punching my mom in her face. And he was like, no, I didn't do none of that. You know, and we went back and forth and back and forth. And you know what I realized about that? My father was an alcoholic. He was in a blackout most of his life. And I realized that most of the stuff that he did, he didn't even realize he had done. So I learned a whole nother level of forgiveness. It's hard forgiving somebody that's done some damage to you. And you got to forgive them anyway. See, so these are the kind of things that I really had to come clean with. See, because the more I came clean with him about this stuff, the more it cleaned my spirit. And the more it cleaned my spirit, the better my life got. See, the one thing that God has always done for me was, if I work in this area, he'll work in that area. And he's opened doors and provided lanes for me that I couldn't have possibly even thought of. Now, I was going to share this story about this guy. He's not here anymore. But it was a white guy. Him and I were kind of like friends, you know. And he was dating this girl. And he used to fight this girl. And so when she called me one day, and I said, you shouldn't be putting up with that. Because, see, it took me back to my mom. You know, and she hadn't been to a meeting in a while. So I said, you need to go to a meeting. And I said, I'll go with you if you want. So we rode up to the meeting. And when we got in the meeting, I went to one side of the room. She went to the other side of the room. I said, look, there's some girls over there. Go get with those women. And I went to the other side of the room. And when we were leaving out, he came in. And she was saying, come on, it's time for us to go. And I said, okay. So when I got in the car, he was coming out behind us. And of course, he saw her and I together and automatically assumed that we were together. And then all of the racial slurs started happening. He was calling me all kinds of names and stuff like that. And I was trying to turn the other cheek. I'm telling you, man, I got a little bit of patience by this time. But, man, he struck a nerve, and I was like, man, fuck this. And I turned around, and she said, nah, come on. So we got in the car, and we're going down Benfield Road, and he's riding behind us trying to run us off the road like thing. And we make it home, and I guess she goes back out there and talk to him. So the first thing I do is what I'm supposed to do. I call my sponsor, and I tell him what happened. And he said, I'll take care of it. So a little while later, he calls me back, and he says, it's taken care of. And I said, nah, hell with that. I'm carrying my shit to the meeting when I go. And he said, nah, you can't do that. And I said, nah, I am, man. I'm not letting them do anything to me. And he said, nah, you can't do that. He said, as a matter of fact, when you go to the meeting on Friday, when you see him, give him a hug. I was like, you crazy. the part about that that really got to me was I had always done everything my sponsor told me to. I told you I didn't know I could do anything different. And when he told me to do that, I was like, man, if I don't do it, I might relapse. You know? So I got this internal struggle going because I really don't want to do it, but I don't want to not do it because I don't want to get high. So when I got to the meeting now, I'm pissed off. I'm pissed off at my sponsor, and I'm pissed off at him too. And I see him come in the door, and I'm thinking, should I do it? Should I not do it? Should I do it? Should I not do it? So I walk over, and I give him a hug. And when I give him a hug, man, he just tightened up like this, you know, like, don't touch me type thing. And the feeling of knowing that that was uncomfortable for him was enough. I pulled him even tighter. And so as I pulled him tighter and I knew it was uncomfortable for him, when I walked away with a smile, you know. So when the meeting was over, I was looking for him. I went and gave him another hug. So I changed my meetings. I went to the meeting that he go to, and I saw him on Monday night, and I hugged him again. And when the meeting was over, I hugged him again. So I'm following him around, now guys, and I'm hugging him just to make him feel bad. That's right. So the next Friday night, I was in the meeting, and I was just being honest, and I was sharing, you know, I had 18 months, and, you know, my life is shit, and I don't want to, I got to walk to work, and I ain't got no car, and I ain't got this, and I ain't got that. And the same guy walked up to me and gave me a car for $49.99, the cost of a battery. He said, I bought a new car, but it doesn't have a battery. If you buy me a battery, I'll give you my old car. See, I learned you got to be careful who you hate in this program. Now, so I took that car, and I had that car for 4 years. Yep. It was an 86 Ford EXP. Anybody know what that is? Me neither. And look, check it out. I didn't ever even wash the car. What I did was I'd go out there and get a can of flat gray spray paint and just spray it so it'd be clean. A little while after that, the guy relapsed. And then he couldn't stay clean. And we were talking one day, and he asked me to sponsor him. And I told him I would, and he celebrated 1 year 3 times. And the problem that he had was he would not come clean. He would not give up his clean time. He would relapse and come back in here and be telling people what to do, and I would tell him, shut the hell up, sit on the front row, and act like you're a newcomer. And he couldn't do it. He relapsed at one point and he died. And you know, I really felt bad for him. I really did. You know, because a lot of people think that they got one more in them and they don't got one more in them. I done buried a lot of people this year and in the past years. Because they don't have one more in. A guy passed away, you know, and I learned that it's important for me to come clean if I want to stay around this program. It's important for me to be honest if I want to stay around this program. It's important for me to share. You know, the basic text says that meetings are a safe place to share, and sharing lessens our fear. And since I have this disease and the core of it is self-centered fear, the more I share about myself, the less fear I have about what I'm doing with myself. And so, you know, I hear people say everything ain't for a meeting. Everything for me is for a meeting. That's right. Because I'm a firm believer that if I share and I ask for help, that God will give me that help. I don't know who he's going to use to give me that help. My sponsor is a great sponsor. He's the best sponsor in Narcotics Anonymous. But he don't have all the answers. So when I share, God put somebody in my life, and most of the time, it's the most unlikely person. A person that I probably wouldn't even talk to that will come up and say something so simple, it'll click. And it'll solve every problem that I got. You know, and the last thing I want to share about is I'm getting old. I ain't want to share that. I'm getting old. Look, about a month ago, I got sick. I had a cold. So I went to the doctors, and the doctor says, you know, you have a cold. Here's some cough syrup, and here's one of these little Z-Packs. So I went home, and I did that. And, of course, I'm doing the Halls cough drops and the Alka-Seltzer Plus. And I'm reading the labels. I'm not taking anything with alcohol. I don't want no drugs. I'm being real careful. And after I take all this stuff, it didn't really do the job. So now I'm starting to, like, be out of breath. So I go back to the doctors, and they said, well, I think you got early stages COPD. And I'm like, what? So now I'm really scared. But this is what I'm thinking in my head. It's like, okay, you can't get away forever. All that shit you did, it's a wonder you still alive now. You know what I mean? I done put enough shit in my body to really take myself out. You know, and I hear people all the time, you know, like they shot dope for 20 years and then they smoke some crack and in 4 months they're in a rehab, right? And I'm saying, what's wrong with them? Shit, I did it the opposite way. I used crack all that time. Insanity is doing the same thing, expecting different results. So I went back to the doctors, and she gave me this inhaler to take, and I'm taking this inhaler, and the breathing is getting more labored. Right? I'm walking from here to my car, and I'm sitting in the car, and I gotta go, and I can't hardly breathe. And so the next thing I know, my legs and stuff are swelling up. My hands are swelling up. I can't make a fist. I ain't got no knuckles no more. It looked like somebody is really shooting dope. And so I go back to the hospital, and he says, with those symptoms, there must be something wrong with your heart. So I'm like, damn. So I go to the hospital, and I'm sitting there, and one of my sponsees called me, and he said, you know, what's up? And I said, nothing. And he says, well, what you doing? And I said, nothing. And he says, well, where you at? See, and I'm like, damn, why you had to ask me that question? You know, I'm trying not to tell him, you know. And I said, well, I'm in the waiting room. He said, the waiting room where? I said, well, at the hospital. And I said, listen, I came around here because I wasn't feeling good, and, you know. And so he says, well, I'll come around here. I said, well, ain't no need you come around here sitting with me. You know, I'm just sitting here. I'll probably be here for the next 8 hours. So he said, okay. I said, just go ahead home. When I find out what's wrong, I'll call you. About 15 minutes later, he brushed across my arm. I'm like, damn. So then he gets a phone call from another one of my sponsees. And he says, well, I'm sitting here in an emergency room with Ron. So he says, I'm on my way. I'm like, yeah, I tell you, fool, don't come up here. You know? So he comes up. So then he gets a call from my sponsor. And my sponsor's like, well, where you at? He said, I'm in the emergency room with Ron. So my sponsor says, come get me. So now all of us are sitting in the emergency room waiting for them. So they call me back and they take blood. They call me back. They do an EKG. Each time they call me back, it's an hour in between. Find out why you stay in the emergency room so damn long. And also, I can't breathe. I'm having problems breathing. So we get upstairs, and they give me my third nebulizer treatment. And the doctor says, I hear your lungs. He says, you have pneumonia. I'm like, how the hell I get pneumonia? I just had a cold. Ooh, okay. All right, guys. So I said, okay. And so they put me on the steroid and they give me these IV antibiotics, you know, and after about an hour or so, like I'm starting to breathe a little bit better, but I'm not really breathing all, you know, all total. And but I feel a little bit better. And so I've been on these antibiotics all the way up until last week, and I'm starting to feel okay, a little bit okay. But my legs and stuff are still swollen, like my knees and stuff are still swollen. And like I had no idea that pneumonia would do that to you, you know. And so, you know, now, and I'm thinking, like when I was a kid, man, I catch a cold, I do all kinds of stuff, play football in the snow with a t-shirt on and all that stuff. And now, like a little cold put me down like that. This is ridiculous. So guess what? I don't like getting old. And that's what happens when you get clean time and narcotics anonymous, you also get old. And that comes with a whole nother bunch of problems that you got to deal with. But you want to know something? I'd rather have these problems than the problems I had before these problems. Yeah. So, I got a lot of character defects, but I'm too grateful to worry about them. I'll work on them one at a time. Thank y'all for letting me share.